One of the great surprises of the last three decades has been the industry's ability to leap from the blocky computer graphics and 8-bit audio of Space Invaders to computers being able to create realistic video and audio simulations of celebrities and politicians and even actors saying and doing the most outrageous things. These so-called deepfakes use artificial intelligence and deep learning to create fake content that looks pretty much real or indiscernible from reality to most people. But could it also have some benefit instead of causing mischief? Could it even herald the future of media? Well, today's guest thinks so. Before we get into it, I want to quickly shout out again to Rocket Software. Big thank you for making today's episode possible. If you haven't already, please do take the time to check them out at rocketsoftware.com to see why over 10 million IT professionals rely on them every day to run their most critical business applications, processes, and data. Well, hey, Disruptors, and welcome to another episode of Digital Disrupted with me, your host, Paul Muller. Our guest today is the CEO of Deep Media. They're an AI platform business, which he co-founded with Emma Brown back, I think, in 2017. And their mission was nothing less than to promote global unity by enabling shared cultural experiences across language barriers. And they've recently launched Copycat, which is a deep fake app that allows users to translate video content into over 50 languages. So that's the utility part of it. The question is, can we have the benefits of some of this deepfake technology without spreading the scourge of misinformation? To help us find out, please welcome to the show, Rajul Gupta. Hey, Rajul.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. Great to have you here. We had a few technical glitches getting this one started, but we're here now. Hey, before we jump into the topic of deepfakes and some of the pros and cons of all of that, we have a little thing we call the lightning round on the show. You ready to play the game?
Yeah, that sounds great.
I'm going to warn you, there are no prizes. Sorry about that. We need to do something about that. All right, first up, question I ask all of our guests, first-time guests, is what would people say is your superpower?
People would say that my superpower is the ability to learn anything very quickly. You know, when I was a kid, I taught myself iOS programming in a weekend. When I was adult, I taught myself PyTorch in a weekend. I can pull out any machine learning algorithm or instrument or anything besides foreign languages and learn it in pretty much 1 week.
All right. I officially hate you. All right. Next up, most disruptive technology of all time.
In my opinion, the most disruptive technology of all time, or at least in our modern era, is the light bulb. The ability to operate not just during the 8 hours a day when there's light outside, but 24 hours a day and share that technology across the entire world has really revolutionized our ability to interact, build societies, communicate, and get stuff done.
People underestimate the change that that had on moving us. You know, we were already into, I guess, the industrial revolution, but that really hypercharged it, didn't it? It just completely, 24/7 factories, the whole thing. It just, we threw away sleep. All right. The best quality a leader can have.
I think the best quality a leader can have is the ability to inspire others. You know, I work with really, really great people, and this company has had so much success, not because of me, but because of the people I work with. And I think the best way we can all develop technology and disrupt collectively is to inspire each other. And that's what I think. Not only do I do that, but everyone at Deep Media does that every single day.
Yeah, you don't necessarily need to be the CEO in order to be a leader in that regard, do you?
Yeah.
You can be leading a team. I agree with you. It's amazing. Your advice to people starting their careers, curious, what would it be?
My advice to people starting their careers would be to surround yourself with great people. I've been working on this technology and this business for much longer than 5 years, but it really took off when I brought on my co-founder, Emma, and every new hire we bring on board just changes the game fundamentally. So it would be, make sure you have the best people around you, people you trust, people you enjoy spending your time with.
Yeah, it's so true. All right. The first word that comes to mind when you think of communication.
The first word that comes to my mind when I think of communication is empathy. I believe and hope that the reason we communicate with each other is to better understand other people's point of view in order to enrich our own lives and life experiences.
Great answer. Last question, at least for this round. If you could use technology to solve one world problem, what would it be and why?
Well, if I could use technology to solve one world problem, it would be to end language barriers. I am a huge Star Trek fan. And in the lore of that show, sometime around the mid 21st century, people invented the universal translator, which allowed people from all different nationalities and ethnicities and countries to finally communicate with each other on the same level. And as we're approaching global problems like supply chain issues and, you know, global climate change and global war, at least in the lore of Star Trek, all of those problems were only able to be solved once we were able to communicate in our own native languages with each other on a fundamental empathetic level. And so if I could use technology to solve one world problem, it would be that, to build the universal translator.
You somehow managed to get a plug into that answer, which I really, really love. Well, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing then, because as you mentioned in one of your answers, you've sort of got about a decade plus experience now in it still feels to be a relatively nascent field of AI and ML. How did you get into the world of, I'm going to call it deepfakes, and there's a sort of, I guess it's almost a pejorative term, and we'll get to some of the benefits in a second, but how did you get into this world?
Well, you know, I've actually been building apps and websites and, you know, things like that since I was 12 years old, so about 18 years now. And one of the things that I was really interested in from a very early age was computer vision. And so, you know, I'm from a small town in Oklahoma, born and raised. And so there wasn't much to do there besides like play around and nerd out with some of these new technologies, which at the time were like iPhones, right? Mm. And as I went to school, I began developing more of an expertise in machine learning. And so by the time I was graduating, I was able to build apps that were largely those face filter apps, right? They used classic computer vision tools. Deepfakes hadn't been invented yet, but they used things like, you know, different algorithms that let you apply bigger eyes or smaller noses or makeup and things like that. By 2017, however, deepfakes were on the rise. They're created with an underlying technology called generative adversarial networks. And I remember GANs. Hmm. Around that time, I saw a video of like Jordan Peele on one side and Barack Obama on the other side. And, you know, Jordan Peele's face and his voice and his emotions and his movements were being transferred to Barack Obama absolutely perfectly. I saw that video and I was just struck by the immense power that this technology had. And I knew that it was going to be a big player in media and communications moving forward. So that was the day I actually founded Deep Media, was the day I saw a deepfake video for the first time. And ever since that day, I've been really figuring out how to advance the technology, but also figuring out applications of the technology that are ethical, that people can use to make the world better, not spread misinformation, but rather enhance communications.
That's an incredible story. I mean, I've got so many questions. I actually wish this was, we've talked about going visual with Digital Disruptive for a while. So it's an audio podcast. I just wish we could roll some examples for some of our audience members, our listeners who may not be so familiar with just some of the concepts you're talking about, because it really is hard to discern that you're looking at a fake when you see this stuff. And I guess it raises a whole bunch of questions about what is reality, which we'll get to in a second. But before we do that, can you talk a little bit about the technology? You mentioned the use of GANs. GANs are, of course, GANs is a technique used for training neural nets, effectively, if I understand that correctly. So it's, you basically pit two of these AIs off against each other until they effectively get smarter. One gets smarter. Mm-hmm. Have I got that roughly right?
Yeah. So, you know, a traditional machine learning algorithm, whether it's a convolutional neural network, a CNN, recombinant neural networks, LSTMs, graph neural networks, they're largely about ingesting some piece of data, let's say an image, an audio file, text, and outputting an answer. Right? Generative networks and GANs are really designed to create, right? That was the major difference between a GAN and generative AI versus classic machine learning. GANs can actually generate new images. They can take an image of someone that is 80 years old and output an image of that same person when they were 20 years old, right? And like you mentioned, the way they were able to do that, to make that leap in generative capabilities, was have this generator and discriminator, these two different networks that are being trained at the same time, that are kind of fighting each other. So GAN stands for Generative Adversarial Network. And the idea of the generator and the discriminator fighting is where the term adversary comes in. There are these two different networks that act as adversaries against each other. That's a classic GAN. You know, more modern cutting edge GANs, the ones that we implement at Deep Media, have many different generators and many different discriminators all in one network, kind of fighting against each other, playing with each other, helping each other. It gets really complicated really fast. But the general idea is that this new type of technology has the ability to synthesize, create synthetic media, to generate new audios and videos that sound hyper-realistic. And that was not capable before the advent of GANs.
Which is just incredible stuff. And they're being used in so many other areas as well, like creating original artworks, which we could, you know, probably a whole other show on that topic, which is worth getting into. Are there other technologies that are used in the creation of deepfakes, or is it all about AI and GANs?
So a lot of people, you know, don't realize that GANs are often powered by other, what we call auxiliary AI, right? These kind of corollary networks that are used to make the GANs more effective. For example, at Deep Media, we have proprietary facial landmark generation and tracking algorithms. So we can guarantee that whenever we're training our networks, every piece of footage, video, audio, or, you know, images that these GANs see are perfectly aligned in the right place, very clean, very high quality. They're all labeled with, you know, information about race, age, gender, emotion. All of these other AI that is more traditional machine learning is actually run before the GAN is ever trained. And then those networks are kind of Frankensteined into the GANs themselves. So we create new generative architectures that incorporate all of this other traditional AI inside of it.
And so listening to this, as you talked about sort of 2017 was, you know, it sounded like you're part of your epiphany, at least anyway, in this area. We're still dealing with technology that's, you know, half a decade old or maybe a decade old. It's relatively newborn. In our world, we're still feeling our way. So some of the power of the things we're seeing at the moment, I imagine we are at the beginning of this J, well, not J curve, because we're not really going down, are we? It's this inflection point into a far more accelerated capability. What are some of the areas that we could perhaps expect to see improving? So my assumption at the moment is, and weirdly enough, I've not built a deep fake myself. I don't know why I haven't. But my initial assumption would be it's computationally intensive. You know, you need to feed it in. You wait a couple of hours to get your stuff back. Where are we at in the technology progression curve? What's Jeffrey Moore had to say about it all?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think of it a lot like the internet in the 90s, right? Like in the 90s, early 2000s, the internet was kind of just coming out. It was very slow, but there were just a few websites, right? And a lot of people at that time didn't see how it was going to progress. They thought it was kind of this gimmick, this joke. It was a fun novelty. But what happened was the technology became so good so fast that now every single element, almost every single element of our lives is reliant on the internet. Every company has a website. The biggest companies in the world are all internet-based companies. And it has pervaded every aspect of our communication, our media, our work. The same thing is going to happen with synthetic media and deepfakes. Right now, traditional deepfakes, the ones that you've probably seen go viral online, take about 10 hours of a person's face and voice from the person you want to deepfake, and 10 hours of like your face and voice if you want to create the deepfake. And it creates that one-to-one match, right? If I have 10 hours of myself and 10 hours of Tom Cruise, I can create a hyper-realistic face and voice deepfake of him, right? But what we're seeing in industry, in academia, and what Deep Media is pioneering are low data deepfakes. So we'd be able to take just a TikTok video, a 10-second video of you saying anything, and use that data to generate synthetically manipulated audio and video outputs, right? And the applications of that can be quite frightening. But if used ethically, what that means is that we can build technology that would allow you to speak, and without training on your face or your voice, without us having to get any of your other data, we can make you speak 50 languages, right? And that's what the technology that we're building. It is low data, but high throughput, right? That means that we don't have to train on individual people. We can immediately build products that work on the 8 billion humans that exist right now. And if you can only speak Vietnamese, we can now make you speak English, French, German, Mandarin, Russian, every single language. And it looks like you and it sounds like you. And it is truly disruptive and global, right?
That is incredible. I was going to ask you about some, what are some of the positive use cases? Because I think, as you mentioned at the beginning of the episode, the obvious sort of mischievous use cases, right? The gagging, the pranking kind of stuff. We've all seen it. But yeah, it's hard to imagine a useful use case for deepfakes. This ability to translate stuff in real time truly does sound groundbreaking. Is it the sort of thing that can be done in real time, or do I need to kind of record it and send it off and have it processed and then sent back to me?
So the technology that we have right now takes about a 5-minute delay, right? If we want to do the really high quality 44.1K audio, 4K video, there still is that delay, but we're working very hard. So over the next 12 to 18 months, we believe that we will have it in near real time. So you and I could hop on a Zoom call or a FaceTime call or any type of video or audio platform and be able to speak 50 different languages. And the key here is that the translations are hyper accurate because we understand not just the words, but the emotion from your voice and your face and incorporate that into the translation. The speech sounds like you. It has your voice and your emotions and your intonations. And the lips are all synced up, right? So it truly is a deep fake. If someone's watching you speak French, they will think that you're speaking French. Now, of course, we're very upfront that all of this has been synthetically manipulated, but it speaks to kind of the subconscious part of the human mind, right? Even if you know that it's faked logically, you still get the emotions and, the lip movements, and it feels real. And that, speaks to something truly inherent to how our brains are wired.
Yeah, I know, without a doubt. That's obviously a great and noble use case, and I love your mission as an organization. I guess people in popular culture would have a sense of what some of the more noble use cases, or at least the more or the less mischievous use cases would be. So I think, we talk about Star Wars is probably a good example, right, where you've had Carrie Fisher, a younger Mark Hamill. Mm. These are actors that have been effectively either recreated or sent back in time through the use of some of these technologies. Are there any other examples of where deep fakes, people might see them in a more positive light?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're just starting to see a lot of those examples, like you mentioned. And, it really reminds me of like any early technology, even like, cryptocurrency or film and television. When it's first coming out, it's almost always associated with things like fraud. Like, early photographs were used to say, hey, look at this thing that happened, but it was actually Photoshopped and it was, people committing fraud. It's used in, pornography, for lack of a better word, and it's used in entertainment. Those are always the three early use cases of any new transformative media-based technology, right? So when we're seeing synthetic media come out today, it's used in fraud, it's used in pornography, it's used in entertainment. But given enough time over the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to pervade pretty much all aspects of our society. We're soon coming up on a world where any piece of audio video content will have some synthetic manipulation, whether that's changing your voice to better match who you feel you are inside, or changing your language, or changing your face, or your hair color, or your hairstyle, or your outfits, or your background. Everything will have some amount of synthetic manipulation. Now, there are good parts to that and bad parts to it. But what we're hoping is that as a company, we can really advance the technology, be known as leaders in the space, and help guide the technology in a way where we can ensure that everything is upfront, that it's not, or at least misinformation is combated, and that the ethics and ethical applications win out over the unethical ones.
Yeah, so one of the things I noticed you use is you describe it as synthetic media versus deep fakes. What are your thoughts about the industry's ability to develop and to be seen to be legitimate while the phrase deepfake is associated with it? It feels much more pejorative than, because we talk about something being photoshopped, but there's how do I put this? It's not quite a neutral term, but it doesn't seem to have, fake is not a nice word, right? Let's be really clear here. It's prejudicial. How do you think that the industry is going to adapt and be adopted? And what word will we use to describe it in a more positive sense? Is it synthetic media?
Yeah, I think synthetic media is a common use that has a more positive connotation. Personally, we like the term generative AI because we feel like it's much more broad and much more accurate to what the technology actually does. The concept that AI can now actually generate content seems to be much more honest and true to what the technology, what the benefits and risks that the technology actually presents. I consider deepfake to be a maliciously created, synthetically manipulated audio or video, right? That's what the word deepfake means to me. It has that malicious intent, and it's usually an audio or video, right? But as we're coming out with new forms of generative AI, we're seeing that there's synthetically generated text, synthetically generated 3D content, right? There's even synthetically generated 3D printing CAD models. So there's a whole host of other applications for this same technology that don't really fit within the box of the words deepfake.
Yeah, I have a sense that we're going to be grappling with the double-edged sword of this technology for a little while yet. To that end, you and I were talking before the show, one of the examples I talk about quite a bit in my personal professional life is the example of one of Stalin's photographs from back in the 30s, 40s, where it's a photograph of him with one of his ministers at the time. I think his name was Nikolai something or other, Nikolai Yetsov or I'll put it in the show notes. But anyway, there's this photograph of him standing next to one of his near and dear ministers. And then after a while, he decided he didn't like him for it or even probably had him executed, I imagine. And so, you know, erased him from history. So he projected forward by changing the past. And he'd had this thing before Photoshop had even been invented. He'd had this photograph manipulated to remove this person. And certainly to my untrained eye, I cannot tell you this photograph has been manipulated. And it broke one of the great rules that I think we as humans have had, which is, you know, if you see a photograph or a video of something, maybe audio, less so audio, because I guess you trust your eye more than you trust your ear. Or at least I do, that it sort of broke the rule of what can you trust. And it was used to manipulate people en masse by government. Let's be really clear here. This wasn't just some kid messing around in a basement. This was a government changing society's entire impression of what had happened in the historical record. Obviously difficult to control then. It feels like it's impossible to control now. What sort of safeguards do you think we need to be thinking about as society? I often think that things like or technologies like blockchain and a chain of custody from the moment of creation to the moment of consumption could be used to effectively digitally fingerprint or at least provide a non-repudiable record of what had happened to that digital artifact. Are there things we could be doing to create a greater sense of confidence in what we see or hear, or are we forever going to be stuck with the fact that unless you are physically in the same room as somebody, you can't be sure that what's happening is real?
Yeah, no, that's a really important question. And I think, you know, first I'd like to address that specific example. And I think it's worth noting that this ability has always existed, right? Even in the 1940s, people were, like you're saying, cropping out people out of photographs to create misinformation. I see it as the difference between the Pony Express and email, right? A long time ago, it took a lot of work. It took a lot of experts.
Well said.
Right? And then now what we're seeing is that anyone can do this just by training a machine learning algorithm. And over the next 5 to 10 years, as this technology gets productized, if there are not systems in place, then literally anyone will be able to just download an app, press a button and do the same thing in audio and video in hyper-realism. And that's very, very frightening. So as we're talking about safeguards, I think it's really important to talk about detection. Being able to train an AI that can reliably and accurately determine whether something has been synthetically manipulated and how it has been synthetically manipulated is absolutely critical to making sure that society's trust in images, videos, and audio does not break down. The trust in images, video, and audio has been absolutely essential to, you know, making sure that we as people are safe and understand what's going on. And in this era of accelerated fake news and misinformation, deep fake detection is absolutely critical. And that's why we're working very, very hard to build publicly available data sets We're working very closely with the United States DOD and the highest levels of government to make sure that detection is cared about, that it's progressed, and that it's integrated into content sharing platforms.
That's incredible. Well, I'm super pleased to hear that, because it's something that we've talked about on the show, you know, on numerous occasions. Is the we had Therese Payton on, who was the former CIO of the White House, was a guest a couple of months back, and she's obviously recently published a book about dis and misinformation. And I think it is going to be a topic that we'll look back on in 20 years' time, and our kids will be looking at us going, "Hey, Mum, Dad, why didn't you do something about this when you had the chance?" Because wars will get started over this stuff if we're not careful. So I'm glad to hear that right. People like yourselves are taking care of all of this. So that's the slightly downside. Let's talk about the upside as we wrap up today, because I see a huge amount of potential, as you mentioned, the idea of bringing societies closer together. Where else do you see this whole synthetic media landscape evolving into over the next, say, I don't know how far out you can look at the moment. It seems like every day things are changing. Let's just say 5-10 years. Put me into the Star Trek machine.
Yeah, sure. So it's going to start in media and communications, right? That's where all of these things really start in becoming legitimate. That means, you know, professional Hollywood film and TV studios, and, you know, Deep Media is working very closely with some of the largest production studios in the world to automate their dubbing process. It's going to look like YouTubers, creator economy, Twitch streamers, and we're working very closely with some of the biggest creators on YouTube to bring localization services, dubbing and lip reanimation to 50 languages to them. And then it's quickly going to grow into fields that aren't that, right? Like just corporate enterprise, being able to hop on a sales call, make a sale, but I'm in America, the person selling to me is in Japan, they only speak Japanese, I only speak English, but neither of us know that, right? In these ways, it's going to very much transform our society. When it grows beyond communication, I think it's going to go into places like medicine, being able to take some of the old MRI machines that are in, you know, developing nations like India and Africa that are from the 70s, right? They have medical devices from the 70s, and use synthetic media and generative AI to transform the images coming out of those machines and make them look like they were coming out of machines from 2020, right? Like you can actually use synthetic media to do what's called image restoration on old medical images. So you can upscale them, make them, you know, really fine-tuned. These AI can actually spot things like cancer better than humans can. But the integration of an AI with a human doctor with this synthetic, you know, generative AI is going to allow for the democratization of medical access across the entire world. That's something that's probably going to take another 5 to 10 years to develop, but it's definitely something on our purview. After that, if we look at things like the metaverse, right, where we're going to exist in this digital landscape, right now the metaverse seems really cartoony, but with generative AI and synthetic media, we're going to see a world that looks as real as our own existence. So essentially what we're talking about is being able to engage with media, communications, and technology in a way that feels 100% realistic to our own life experiences. It's not going to, if deep media does our job right, it's not going to change the way society works, but rather enhance what's already here.
That sounds quite amazing. I mean, one last question on the technologies. Why doesn't Siri still understand what I'm talking about when I ask for directions, though?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It just seems we can do these incredible things, but sometimes the simple things are still really, really hard. I think it's an exciting vision for the future. It's been an incredible pleasure having you on. If people want to learn more about this whole area of synthetic media, I'll try and use something more positive, or generative media and deepfakes, where can they go to learn more?
Yeah, well, you know, they can check out our website, deepmedia.ai. We're also on Twitter and TikTok at deepmediaai.
Love it. All right, last question. The show sponsor, Rocket Software, has a set of values they talk about that matter to them. They talk about empathy, humanity, trust, and love. Just curious, what matters to you right now?
You know, right now, to me and to everyone at Deep Media, the thing that matters most is unity. We work really, really hard to make sure that people are understood and that they can communicate and talk to each other in the same language. I know that the world seems very fractured right now, both in our own country, the United States, and just globally. And we really hope giving people the ability to communicate effectively with empathy, with trust, will do some good in the world. I mean, that alone isn't going to solve all our problems, but I really hope it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely fabulous stuff. I think you're absolutely right. And to, you know, what I feel like we need to do is pop this podcast through Copycat and we'll start publishing it in French and a couple of other languages just for fun.
Yeah, there you go. Hit us up. I'm sure we could make that happen.
Yeah, let's do that. I'm going to get the show's producers to have a look at whether we can do that, even if it's just a special episode we put out there, because that's such an amazing thing that you're doing. I want to thank you again, Rajul, for taking the time, especially with the technical glitches we had at the beginning of the show. So thank you so much for your patience. And thanks again to Rocket Software for bringing us another episode of Digital Disrupted. And thank you for, I always say tuning in, and there's no radio anymore. I've got to stop using that anachronism. You all know what I mean. You all know what I mean. If you like what you've heard, please do give us a thumbs up on Apple, iTunes, or Spotify, whichever podcatcher you're using to listen to this show. You can also reach out to me, speaking of Twitter, at X the Streams, and our show sponsor at Rocket. If you've got any questions for our guests, such as Rajul, or ideas for topics you'd like to hear covered on future episodes, with that, we'll see you all next week, everyone. Again, won't see you because you can't see me, but you know what I mean. Stay disruptive.